Welcome to Conversations on Healthcare with Mark Maselli and Margaret Flinter. Mark is the founder, president, and CEO of Community Health Center Incorporated, a provider of primary healthcare services for the uninsured and underserved with 170 service locations in Connecticut. Margaret is senior vice president and clinical director of CHC and is a family nurse practitioner by profession. Conversations on Healthcare is a weekly look at the people and ideas that are transforming the delivery of healthcare in America. And this week, Mark and Margaret are joined by Utah Governor Gary Herbert for a conversation about his state's innovative approach to healthcare. In the Tech Report segment, you'll hear about technology that improves stroke diagnosis. And we begin with this week's bright idea. Here's Mark Maselli.
Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives. This week's bright idea comes to us from Massachusetts, where three health centers are experimenting with a new tactic for combating obesity, prescribing more fruits and vegetables. The project, Prescription Produce, centers on doctors prescribing their patients coupons from local farmers' markets. The coupons amount to $1 a day for each member of the patient's families. Although farmers' market voucher programs have been used in Massachusetts for decades, this project is unique because it specifically targets obesity, and doctors actually write prescriptions that are filled at farmers' markets rather than simply issuing coupons. The target patients are obese or at risk of becoming obese, and most live in neighborhoods where healthy produce is expensive and hard to come by. The project's goal is not only to increase patients' access to fruits and veggies, but in the short run, to increase daily consumption of these essential foods by one serving a day. On a larger time scale, participants hope patients will establish consistently healthier eating habits. The pilot project will include 50 families at three Massachusetts health centers. The project's designers see this program as vital because long-lasting health improvements will only endure if an increase in fruits and vegetables is coupled with an equal or decrease in sugary, high-fat processed foods. So patients will learn how to make better diet choices while receiving the resources to make those choices a reality. To gauge the pilot's success, doctors will monitor their patients' eating patterns and attitudes, body mass index, and weight change. The Ceiling and Visibility Unlimited Foundation, which sponsors the program, is also working on expanding it through a year-round partnership with local grocery stores so that the closing of our farmers market in the winter will not set patients back. By increasing immediate access to essential fruits and vegetables, the Massachusetts Prescription Produce Project is tackling obesity head-on and helping people establish lifelong healthy eating habits. Now that's a bright idea. This is Conversations on Healthcare. Today, we're speaking with Governor Gary R. Herbert. He was sworn in as Utah's 17th governor in 2009. Welcome, Governor Herbert.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure for me to be with you, Mark and Margaret.
Governor, Utah began reforming healthcare long before health reform was signed into law, starting discussions back in 2005. And your General Assembly passed in 2007 Utah's health insurance exchange, a cornerstone of your reform. And while all states must have these exchanges up and running by 2014, tell us why Utah is way ahead of the curve of other states and what drove Utah to be such an innovator in health reform.
Well, I think it's a lot of reasons. I think we've been kind of that old pioneer spirit, you know, try to find a better way to do things. And healthcare has been a topic on everybody's mind for many, many years. And here in Utah, we've just decided we would try to tackle it. We think states throughout the country ought to be tackling it individually. In fact, as laboratories of democracy, we probably have ways to, in fact, address health care that the federal government would not be quite as nimble about approaching. And we'll learn from each other, by the way. I think we'll learn from our successes and our failures. And so, as you already mentioned, you know, 6 years ago, we started looking at health care and seeing what we could do to, in fact, slow down the rising costs, see if we can't find better ways to have access to health care, help our small business community in particular to address what was becoming the biggest expense item in their balance sheet, and that's health care. And hence, out of that effort came the Utah Health Care Exchange.
You know, when we look at these exchanges, we've really got two examples. We've got Massachusetts in the east and Utah in the west. And I understand that your approach to the exchange is quite different from Massachusetts. I think that would be really interesting.
Well, the key issue difference is we don't have a mandate. We're trying to use the invisible hand of the marketplace, you know, a free market society, and let the private sector find ways to attract customers rather than have some kind of a mandate that you will be a customer. And that's the biggest difference. We've also are trying to, in fact, control the escalating costs, and so we have what's called a defined contribution approach as opposed to a defined benefit approach. And so each employer can decide how much they're going to contribute to the employee's health care and pick a number. It could be $500, $600, $700 a month. Then the employee can go to the web page, really the exchange. It's kind of like a facilitator, ability for them to match up their dollars that they control now as the consumer with available plans through a web page. And we have right now about 146 different options available to employees with four different major insurance carriers. And so if Gary Herbert goes there, he can look with my money. If I've got $700 a month to spend, I can find a plan that suits my unique needs as Gary Herbert and family. And I can add to it or take from it as I see fit. But I'm in control of spending my own dollars and buying the coverage that I uniquely need, no more, no less. And so we find efficiencies there, and I think economies of scale, which will take place. And now the business person has a controlled number. It's not going to escalate. It's not going to fluctuate. They control what their expense side is, which improves their bottom line. The consumer is in control of purchasing the insurance that they need, uniquely so for themselves and their family. And it's a win-win all the way around.
Governor, the free marketplace is certainly driven by access to information. And Utah's website at the Office of Healthcare Statistics is a real treasure trove of health information. It looks at how Utah compares to the rest of the country and gives data specific to cost and performance by providers. I'm wondering how Utah came to be committed to transparency and how transparency and information is playing a role in how you think about health reform in Utah.
Well, as we've analyzed the healthcare issue, and it's a very complex issue, and there's a lot of different facets, and I think we need to, in fact, define healthcare reform a little better in this country than we've done in the past. But for us, we believe that competition means you've got to have good information. You can't shop and compare if you don't know what it is that you're shopping for, and comparing it apples with apples and do a cost comparison analysis for quality and service. And so having good data and having good information will allow the consumer now to, in fact, shop and compare and find out where they get the best bang for their buck when it comes to getting health care. And unfortunately, we've kind of gotten away from that when it comes to health care. We shop very carefully when we're buying bananas and cereal at the grocery store. We have a lot of different options out there that we compare, not only brand with brand, but store with store. And we get the thing that we're looking for the best and get the highest quality at the lowest price. We need to introduce that same kind of transparency and openness so that the consumer can shop and compare for health care. And we do it here in the state of Utah. There are places, for example, if you were going to get your appendix taken out, there's some parts of the state that will have better quality at lower cost than other parts. And that principle of free market and choice takes effect, and the competition will drive down the price and drive up the quality. That's the way it's worked in our country, and that's what we're trying to do with health care here in Utah.
Governor, the state of Utah is so much further ahead, of course, with the exchange process, since you have already established one. But one of the unknowns for even Utah and Massachusetts is how the requirements for the exchange will match up with the requirements under the Affordable Care Act. My guess is that you've continued to fine-tune and improve your own exchange.
Well, one thing I would tell our listeners is this is a work in progress. We certainly are at the very beginning stages of this and its implementation, and we are learning as we go. The Affordable Care Act is going to have some kind of mandate that comes to all states to have some kind of a health exchange. The concern I've got is that in their mandating, they, in fact, take away flexibility. And we're doing what's appropriate for Utah's unique demographics and our own unique situation. And I expect Colorado will find their own niche and other states. And they're not going to be the same. That's the problem with what's coming out of Washington, D.C., is a one-size-fits-all approach, which doesn't make probably anybody too happy. So I think 50 states doing their own thing, they'll find uniqueness, will learn from each other and improve. One thing we've done is we've got the insurance department that now audits our prices and make sure that things are competitive, keeping an eye on making sure there's level playing fields, that we're not having some unintended consequence that comes out of this. We started with about 100 employees and with 3,000 people being insured, and we're planning by 2012 to have 25 to 30,000 people that will be insured. And so we're growing. It's not as fast as if you mandate everybody to do it. This is a slower process, but it also is very inexpensive. We're spending probably about $500,000 or $600,000 total to put an exchange in place. So it's going to be a lively discussion, and again, this is a work in progress, and we're certainly at the beginning stages of this effort.
This is Conversations on Healthcare. Today we're speaking with Utah Governor Gary Herbert. Governor Herbert, you have a strong commitment to states taking the lead in healthcare reform, as you quite nicely articulated. And Utah has been a leader, as other states have been planning for their exchanges, and we know that a number of them, Colorado is reportedly looking closely at Utah as it plans its final legislation. But tell us a little more, though, about what do you think the role should be for the federal government? Certainly, it can't be left up to all the states. Should there be some minimum standards of which then the states build upon? I'm trying to get at your philosophy here, and I certainly understand the notion that states are laboratories and they are fonts of opportunities for innovation, but would we have programs like Medicaid or Medicare without the federal government at least laying the groundwork for them?
Well, we certainly do have a national health care system called Medicaid and Medicare, and it's in place. I think we need to leave flexibility to the states. There can be some minimum standards, but I would emphasize they ought to be minimum. And let the states build upon that. I'd much rather have a block grant of money given to the states and based on some kind of proportionality. And so California would get a lot more money than would, say, Utah. But we will then be able to find better ways to spend the money without having to say, Mother, may I, to the federal government. I'll just give you an example. We, in our Medicaid reform efforts here in Utah, wanted to go paperless. It will save us about $6.3 million and provide us with better service to our Medicaid recipients. Unfortunately, the rules in Medicaid out of Washington, D.C. say you cannot go paperless. We made a request. We asked for a federal waiver of that requirement. And the interesting thing is we got a denial of that request sent to us by, of all things, email. They sent us a paperless reply to say, no, you can't do this. Well, this has been silly. And actually, I talked personally with President Obama and said, hey, I've got a great idea of how we can save $6.3 million in Utah and close to $1 billion if other states, in fact, embrace the concept of going paperless. And he said, hey, sounds like a good idea to me if it's voluntary. And I said, it is voluntary. And so he called upon Secretary of Health Sebelius to, in fact, work with Utah. We now are signing an agreement to allow us to have a federal waiver to go paperless. Well, that's an example of the creativity and innovation that comes from a state. And if the federal government just let us be these laboratories of democracy within an umbrella, some kind of a skeleton approach as far as what we should be doing as a minimum, I think each state will build a program with the available funds that they have and match it with funds of their own. And although they will not be the same, they will, in fact, be flexible and I think serve their demographics better than a one-size-fits-all that becomes more costly and ends up causing, like a state like Utah, to take money out of education, for example, or other critical needs in order to fund the growing demand for Medicaid. So we've got to work together on it. It's not just the states alone. It's certainly not the federal government alone. It really is a requirement for us to work together, and I think giving the states flexibility with a kind of an umbrella approach from the federal government.
Are you working intentionally with collaboratives of other states in the West or other regions to develop best practices that work on a statewide level and try and replicate them?
Absolutely. We don't have a corner on the market of best practices. We've had some stumbles. We've done some things we thought would work, and they have not. And so we've had to pull back and start over. This 30-state plus conference that we're going to have, we're going to host, I expect we'll learn things from those folks as we have the discussion. We're going to be later this year have our own healthcare summit focusing specifically on cost and cost control and the quality of healthcare. For example, it could be argued that if we want to have lower cost and improve quality, why don't we just have more doctors? Why do we not spend some of our resources on providing more opportunities for people to get into medical school, to become doctors and nurses and physician assistants and those kind of things, particularly for some of our rural areas that are really being shortchanged on having quality caregivers in rural parts of our state? I think there are things that we can be doing that are just kind of commonsensical, which will allow us to, in fact, improve access and improve quality and lower costs. And, of course, if we lower costs, we improve accessibility at the same time. So these are all kind of joined together at the hip. We're going to have our own healthcare summit here for Utah and look at different suggestions and ideas and try to get people to think outside the box. We're going to host 30 states with our healthcare exchange and see what they've got to contribute, and they've got questions and maybe suggestions. And frankly, that's how it works in the marketplace. We learn from each other. We, in fact, find best practices and find those successes are out there in the marketplace and embrace them. We find out where there's failures and where things are maybe not going as well. We'll probably disregard those and go a different way. That's what happens in a free market system. And that's really what Utah is trying to do, is incorporate free market principles to the healthcare debate. And we believe if we'll do that in the long term, we're going to have more affordability and better quality and better accessibility for all of the people of Utah.
Governor, GE recently announced a $500,000 grant to the Salt Lake Community Health Center. Health centers are committed to caring for special populations, improving health outcomes, and building healthy communities. What's your approach to ensuring access to high quality and effective primary care for all of your residents in Utah, and what are the roles the health centers are playing for you?
Well, particularly our local health centers have a significant and dramatic role on health care in the local communities. The closer we can get it to the people, the more responsive it is. And we're one that doesn't believe that government can do it all. For example, we have a lot of volunteer care clinics in Utah where people volunteer their time, doctors, nurses, other medical practitioners. They have some private donations that come from even other medical, like Intermountain Healthcare has donated monies to, in fact, some of these volunteer care clinics, other private individuals and entities that have some disposable revenue and resources to fund clinics where people have no insurance, have no income, and yet have needs for primary health care, and so they just go there and they get it free of charge on a volunteer basis. We provided where there's no liability so that people are immune from any kind of lawsuit, litigation as they provide this health care. It provides a safe environment for doctors and nurses and others to practice, and it provides a great service to people who have no health care coverage at all. So more than just going to the emergency room, we have now some preventative medicine and clinics that will provide health care to those who are on the lower end of the economic spectrum. And again, it's just a very good complement to what we already have in the marketplace. And because of that, you know, virtually the people of Utah in some form or fashion have coverage. Clearly the wealthier people have better coverage and better access. But we're trying to see what we can do to make sure that there's a leveling of the playing field so that everybody has at least minimal health care coverage here in Utah.
Governor Herbert, we'd like to ask all of our guests this final question. When you look around the country and the world, what do you see in terms of innovation? And who should our listeners at Conversations be keeping an eye on?
Well, I think there's a lot of things that are happening throughout the world, and I certainly am not an expert on everything. But I know here in Utah, we have a significant medical device sector of our economy. where we have with Edward Life Sciences, for example, Merit Medical, Fresenius, some other different medical device companies that have significant market share, not only in America, but in the world. And it really fuels not only good health, but it fuels economic expansion and jobs. And frankly, as we look around the world, those countries which are the wealthiest just happen to be the healthiest. So it follows that we all ought to be concentrating on grow the economy, have a healthy economy, and it will follow, we'll have healthier people. People have more disposable income, have healthier lifestyles, better nutrition, better prevention as far as our health care approach goes. And so it goes, at least in my review of what we're trying to do here in Utah, let's grow the economy, and in return we're going to find better health. I think there's a number of countries out there that are trying to find innovation and creativity. I think that comes mostly from the private sector, and I think as we free up the private sector and don't inhibit their ability to be creative and to have that risk-reward, which we call capitalism in a free market, we're going to find great success out there. As government steps in and inhibits that, or unlevels the playing field, we're going to have a stifling of that ability in a free market to be creative. And again, as you look at our founding of our country and what we've done just in the last 100, 120 years, it's come from free market principles that have, where people said, you know what, if I can build a better mousetrap, I can make money, I'll be better off, and the community will be better off because of my new invention. Well, that is no more true in healthcare than anything else. So let's unleash that power of creativity and innovation. And every state ought to be doing it. 50 laboratories of democracy, finding better ways to do things with research and technology. And in doing so, we'll improve everybody's health.
Today, we've been speaking with Utah Governor Gary Herbert. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Mark and Margaret.
We close with the Tech Report, our weekly look at how people are using technology to improve health and wellness. I'm Lauren Bonner. A stroke is considered one of the most devastating complications of the Western lifestyle, and emergency departments are not yet prepared to provide around-the-clock stroke diagnosis and treatment. But with the rise of mobile health, a market that's expected to be the fastest growing in the next 5 years, according to experts, healthcare providers have the opportunity to further enhance diagnosis for a stroke. To put this in perspective, it's important to know the advances medicine has made in stroke diagnosis. A standard protocol allows doctors to see what's going on in the stroke victim's brain. Ross Mitchell, a professor in the Department of Diagnostic Radiology at the University of Calgary in Alberta, Canada, says technology needs to be involved.
You have to find out whether they're having a bleeding stroke or a blockage stroke so you can give the appropriate treatment. And in order to figure that out, you have to image the brain.
In many emergency department stroke centers, a CT scan is performed and a radiologist or a neuroradiologist has to be on site to interpret the scan. And if someone isn't available, that's critical time lost. Mobile technology is useful in acute care situations like stroke diagnosis where time matters most. Mitchell has been involved with the development and testing of a new application called Resolution MD Mobile that's able to send the images to an expert remotely.
With this technology, what you could do is put it in a community that has a CT scanner but may not have a stroke neurologist or a radiologist who can interpret the scans. And what happens then is that emergency doctor can call the tertiary center, the academic medical center that has the stroke team, and they could ask them to help consult on the stroke that's happening in the local emergency room right away.
The technology is capable of solving two major issues involved with sending these kinds of images electronically. Because the large data sets are not actually transferred to the mobile device, the images can be viewed securely and quickly. Brian Osing is CEO of Calgary Scientific, the company that developed and now licenses Resolution MD.
The only way to overcome those issues are to be able to have a technology that can make all of that diagnostic information, whether it's images or records, available in real time without having to copy it or send it or transfer it somewhere.
The images stay on the server, which can be accessed with a mobile device or a secure internet connection. They never leave the hospital. So, for example, says Osing,
the on-call neuroradiologists or radiologists will have their cell phone, whether it's an iPad or an iPhone, whatever, it will start to ring, and you know they will immediately be able to talk in voice to that referring physician, and they will immediately be able to hit the link that they've been sent from our system and have the images come up of that patient.
And when the remote expert is done looking at the exam, the stream to the server is shut down. No heavy images are transferred, and no confidential patient information is passed on. Mitchell and his team at Calgary University have tested the technology for clinical effectiveness. In their study, they found a 99% agreement in diagnosing stroke with Resolution MD to the traditional medical workstation results in a radiology room. Mitchell is encouraged by the findings, as well as the reaction he's seen from doctors. Most are open to this technology, and already many carry a smartphone in their pocket. Resolution MD Mobile is being tested at multiple locations in Canada and the United States, including the Mayo Clinic Hospital in Phoenix, Arizona. Pilot studies there are providing evidence to support regulatory approvals.
That's Lauren Bonner with this week's edition of the Tech Report. If you have questions for Mark Maselli and Margaret Flinter, or would like to subscribe to the Conversations podcast, you can visit them on the web at chc1.com. The Health Forum is part of connecting our communities from Connecticut Public Broadcasting in partnership with area nonprofits, and production support for Conversations on Healthcare has been provided in part by Community Health Center Incorporated. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.